Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. The Iowa caucuses happened! The Iowa caucuses happened! So now everybody can go back to forgetting that Iowa exists, except when you're doing crossword puzzles or seeing a revival of The Music Man. We'll ask who won, who lost, and who refused to take the hint. Plus the king of the freaks and geeks, Paul Feig, plays our games, and Carl Castle gives me some fatherly, practical advice before I do a meet and greet with public radio listeners.
Simply put, your task is to be seen and not eaten.
We'll ask who really got that advice and why. Stay safe until our quiz begins right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. 2 days before New Hampshire's primary, Mitt Romney's rivals continue to take aim at the frontrunner. As NPR's Mara Liasson reports from Concord, this morning's debate was the most contentious of the race so far.
After avoiding attacks on Romney and training their fire instead on each other, this morning Romney's competitors finally began their attack on the man who appears to be cruising to the nomination. Newt Gingrich, who took a pounding from a super PAC supporting Romney in Iowa, said this after Romney claimed he didn't run for re-election in Massachusetts because he was not a career politician.
Can we drop a little bit of the pious baloney? The fact is, you ran in 94 and lost. That's why you weren't serving the Senate with Rick Santorum. The fact is, you had a very bad re-election rating. You dropped out of office.
Romney was also attacked by Rick Santorum for not standing up for conservative principles and by Ron Paul for supporting an individual mandate and the TARP bailouts. Mara Liasson, NPR News, Concord, New Hampshire.
Turkey's foreign minister says Iran and six world powers have agreed in principle to resume talks on Iran's nuclear program. From Istanbul, NPR's Peter Kenyon reports Turkey is offering to host the talks.
The official Anatolian news agency reports that Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu, who recently visited Tehran, says Iran and lead EU negotiator Catherine Ashton have agreed in principle to resume nuclear talks. Davutoğlu went on to say the talks would be held in Turkey, but there was no confirmation of either the venue or the date for resuming talks from Iran or the international negotiators. Two rounds of talks last year proved inconclusive, and Iran has continued enriching uranium since. Iran's hardline Kayhan newspaper is reporting that Iran has begun enriching uranium at a new underground site, said to be protected against military strikes. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Istanbul.
The British government is warning terrorists may be completing plans to launch attacks in Kenya, and British nationals there should be on alert. The warning comes after a British citizen was arrested, suspected of masterminding an Al-Qaeda plot. Kenyan police say Al-Shabaab militants in Somalia have joined with Al-Qaeda to plan attacks in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. The president of the Philippines is warning there's evidence Islamist terrorists might attack an annual Roman Catholic procession in the capital, Manila, tomorrow. President Benigno Aquino called a news conference today to warn the terrorists could use bombs to disrupt the procession that typically draws millions of people. In Tucson, Arizona this morning, bells will ring, residents will pause to remember the tragic scene outside a grocery store a year ago that left six people dead and 13 injured after a deranged gunman went on a shooting spree. Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords has spent each day of the past year recovering from a gunshot wound to her head. She and her husband, Mark Kelly, will join a candlelight vigil this evening for a commemoration of those who died. This is NPR. In Britain, another controversy is erupting over racism in the country's national sport, soccer. NPR's Philip Reeves reports it centers on a game at Liverpool, one of the world's most famous clubs.
The game was interrupted after a black player from a visiting team, Oldham, was reduced to tears by verbal abuse from someone in the crowd. Police have since arrested a 20-year-old man on suspicion of committing a racist offence. The case is fueling a national debate over racism. The same club, Liverpool, caused controversy by publicly protesting when a star player recently received an 8-match ban for a racist remark. Next month, the captain of England's national team is due in court to face allegations of racially abusing a player. This debate's not just about sport. Last week it intensified when two white men were finally jailed for a racist attack that killed Stephen Lawrence, a black teenager nearly 19 years ago. The Lawrence murder exposed institutional racism in London's police and became notorious worldwide. Philip Reeves, NPR News, London.
More than 3,000 residents of Nome, Alaska are still waiting for the arrival of a Russian tanker and some much-needed fuel. The tanker's being escorted through thick sea ice by Coast Guard cutter Healy. Lieutenant Bernie Auth says it could still take a day or two to get to Nome.
Coast Guard cutter Healy is continuing to transit north towards Nome. They're breaking the path through the ice for the vessel Renda so that they can supply fuel to the city of Nome.
Auth says cutting through ice is an extremely slow process. So slow, in fact, that Western Alaska has never received a shipment of oil by sea during winter. But the community didn't get its usual winter fuel supply before the freeze set in. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Capella University, celebrating teachers through its support of the StoryCorps National Teachers Initiative. Learn more at capella.edu.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Great to be with you. Great to see you. We got a great show for you today. We got the director of Bridesmaids, among other great things, Paul Feig. He'll be coming on later to play our game, but I want to point out that this, the first week of January, marks our 14th birthday at this show. That's right, Wait Wait is now entering our awkward adolescent phase, but we are still going to stay focused on getting our work done. Right, Carl?
Shut up. I hate you. I hate all of you.
Well, don't worry, it's just a phase, and while we wait for Carl to come out of his room, which I'm sure he will soon, give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Desiree Hernandez from Brooklyn, New York, originally from Puerto Rico.
Hey, Desiree, how are you?
I'm great, how are you?
I'm fine. Desiree Hernandez is a beautiful name.
Oh, thank you so much.
I find it very romantic.
Oh, thanks.
I'm sorry, I'm just kind of stopping there, really. All right, well, Desiree, let's introduce you to our panel. First, say hello to a humorist and the author most recently of Alpha Better Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt Jr. is here.
Hi, Roy.
Hi, Desiree.
Next is the woman behind the advice column Ask Amy and author of the memoir The Mighty Queens of Freeville. It's Miss Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Desiree.
And finally, a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber is here.
Hi, Desiree Hernandez.
Desiree, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Of course, Carl Castle will start off this year, as he starts off most of them, by reenacting three quotations in the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice, and your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes.
Here is your first quote.
Well, I got to find those eight guys, one by one, and thank them for that landslide.
That was somebody celebrating his 8-vote margin of victory in the Iowa caucuses this week. Who was it?
Mitt Romney.
Yes, it was. It was a big win for Mitt Romney in Iowa. It was a big win, even though it was just by 8 votes over Rick Santorum. That's because Iowans are known for being very conservative for their pork products and for really hating Mitt Romney. Mm. In fact, Iowa was founded in the 1850s by immigrants who moved from the East Coast in the fear that someday Mitt Romney would live there. Romney narrowly won Iowa, even though he hardly campaigned there,
the less time he spent in Iowa, the higher his poll numbers went. His campaign manager noticed this, so in the lead-up to New Hampshire, he'll be hanging out in Canada. The Romney campaign slogan will be, "Vote Romney," and he promises he'll stay away.
Mitt Romney, you don't have to like him.
Yeah. Or maybe if he stays away long enough, they can go with Romney. No, really, he's better than you remember.
Romney, no, the other Romney.
And what did Romney get as a prize? What did Romney get as a prize for winning Iowa? He got the endorsement of John McCain. Ooh. McCain is known for his expertise and discernment when it comes to picking ex-governors. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. Everybody talked about it, including us, back in 2008, how much John McCain loathed Mitt Romney. Could not stand him. It was palpable. So we're wondering what McCain got in return for the endorsement. A federal ban on kids on his lawn? An appointment of Secretary of Rage? Your next quote, Desiree, is a series of messages we got this week. Here's the first.
I love the film We Bought a Zoo. A great family movie.
Here's another message.
Got to watch Fox News at 5 EST.
Here's another one.
Vacation's great time for thinking. St. Bart's, too many people. Thoughts best kept private around here.
That was some of the wisdom offered by media mogul Rupert Murdoch, who started doing what this week?
He started tweeting.
He did start tweeting, yes. Tweet, tweet, tweet. The News Corporation tycoon sent out his first tweet, naturally enough, from his yacht in the Caribbean on New Year's. And then, since then, he's let the world know that he likes Rick Santorum, Mayor Bloomberg, and various news stories and movies put out by the companies he owns. Like everyone else, he also tweets about what he had for lunch. In his case, it was the blood of innocent children, which he requires to stay alive.
He can get by on the blood of slightly bad children.
He can.
That's not fair.
Yeah, he washes it down with the tears of the innocent.
Yes, that'll work.
So Rupert Murdoch started tweeting, and everybody in the media world was like, why is Rupert Murdoch tweeting? Does he have no other way to make his opinions known to the world? Maybe he's doing it as a PR move to seem more human, you know, because his other attempts to become more human failed after his body rejected all those hearts.
Tweeting from a yacht somehow seems different.
Really? Why?
Well, it should be called twatting or something. It's something different. Tweeting from a yacht, or it should have a CH.
Yeah, it's called
the silent. That should be the word for sure.
Yeah.
All right, here, Desiree, is your last quote. It's actually a set of instructions supposedly once given to Barack Obama.
Simply put, your task is to be seen and not eaten.
So the White House this week actually put out an official denial, saying that as a young man, President Obama never received those instructions as part of a secret CIA mission to where?
Afghanistan?
No, this is even wilder. This is actually one of the more obscure bits of news in the week, but we thought it was interesting. Did you hear this?
No.
No?
If you didn't hear it, you might not be able to guess it.
Yeah. The answer is, I'll just give you the answer, Desiree, it's Mars.
Mars.
Oh, come on.
This story might have been...
Wait. Hear Peter out here.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I know it sounds crazy. No, really, most people didn't bother noticing this story, but the White House did. They denied it. Wired magazine spoke with two men. They claimed they were once chrononauts, or time travelers. Mm. They said they were part of a secret team along with the young Barack Obama. When he was at Occidental College, it was some sort of like study abroad program. They traveled to Mars via time machine space travel in the early 80s to shore up U.S. defenses from intergalactic threats. Mm-hmm. And instead of refusing to dignify these ramblings, the White House denied the president has ever traveled to Mars. In fact, they were so quick to deny it, now we believe it.
Yeah. And you know what else?
What?
Donald Trump has sent some people over there to Mars.
Yeah,
you would not believe what
they found. Oh, yeah.
But you know what? It's like, it's plausible because we really haven't had any problems with Mars.
That's true.
You know, so.
And why not?
Yeah.
How do you get eaten on Mars? What was that? Don't be quiet and don't get eaten.
Yeah, we don't know. We're not sure what they say was afraid was going to eat him.
Well, I just think that's good advice regardless.
It's a weird thing, because if you want to bring Obama down with a conspiracy, why would you make one that's so weird and also so cool?
Yeah.
He was part of a junior squad of chrononauts going to Mars to fight some sort of menace that might eat him?
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to hurt him with anybody's
mouth. Yeah, and then, like, Obama, some years later, sits down to write his memoir, and he's like, should I write about my top-secret mission to Mars to fight off the man-eating aliens? Or just a reminiscence about my father, who I never met? Mm-hmm. My father it is. Carol, how did Desiree do in our quiz?
Well, Desiree, you're a winner, and that's because you had two correct answers. Congratulations.
Yay! Well done.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium, and I want to tell you about our upcoming show in Salt Lake City in February. For tickets and more information, you can go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, PepsiCo has dismissed a complaint from a man. He says he found a dead mouse in his can of Mountain Dew. They say, no, this suit has no merit. There's no way that could happen. Why?
Because, they argued, any mouse trapped in a can of Mountain Dew would have decayed and dissolved long before that.
Exactly right.
And if the can were bigger, by God, they could do it to a horse.
Exactly.
Mountain Dew.
Ronald Ball of Illinois, he's suing PepsiCo. He says he opened up his can of Mountain Dew, expecting a refreshing drink, found a dead mouse. But Pepsi's lawyers fought back with this argument. They say Mountain Dew, which, by the way, is something you buy and put inside your body, would dissolve the mouse long before you could drink it. They're not saying it didn't happen. They're saying it couldn't happen because their product is so toxic that no living thing can possibly survive being immersed in its corrosive juices.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes great.
They did say that there might be some sort of mouse jelly.
Well, what happened was is reporters checked it out, and it's true. Mountain Dew, because it has so much citric acid, is quite corrosive to tissue, even more so than Coke. So instead of Grab-A-Dew, the soft drink slogan is now Grab-A-Dew with a pair of tongs and keep it away from your eyes and soft tissues.
Yeah. But, you know, I bet the mice know this.
Yeah.
And you know just stay away.
This? You know who loves this? Mice gangsters.
Yes.
Great just, way for them
right.
to dispose of bodies.
They just lead you right to the can and to threaten you.
Yeah.
Okay, Squeaky, you let us down too many times.
Exactly.
Squeaky!
No, give me a break. I can pay the money. I can pay the money.
I can do it.
Yeah, I know.
Not the dew.
Yeah.
And then they're like, Squeaky, don't worry about Squeaky. You're not going to see Squeaky around here no more.
He's, shall we say, in the dew.
To threaten each other, they send a pull tab wrapped in newspaper.
Exactly.
I offered him a drink he could not refuse.
Oh, beautiful Sal was a stone-hearted gal, refusing to bill or to coo. But Clem was right smart, he appealed to her heart with that gal getting good old Mountain Dew.
Yahoo! Mountain Dew!
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Esurance, offering mobile apps that let users submit accident claims at the scene, more at esurance.com. The John Dean Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And Focus Features with Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, from author John le Carré, starring Gary Oldman, Colin Firth, and Tom Hardy, now playing. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Out of Iraq and forced to cut costs, Defense Secretary Leon Panetta says the U.S. needs a smaller, leaner fighting force. But
we must maintain the world's finest military.
Critics warn it can't have both. I'm Jennifer Ludden. Pentagon cuts and the future of the U.S. military, plus the opinion page. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons from 1 until 3.
Hello, it's Garrison Keillor, a Prairie Hump Companion, heading back to Nashville, the Ryman Auditorium, for two live broadcasts, Saturday, April 21st, Saturday the 28th, celebrating Nashville Public Radio's 50th anniversary. Tim Russell, Sears God, Fred Newman, the Guys All-Star Shoe Band, musical guests, and of course the Newsom Lake Wobegon. Tickets at Ryman.com or at PrairieHome.org, and hope to see you there.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me right now here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. It's 19 minutes after 11, 47 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Amy Dickinson, Roy Blunt Jr., and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is John Kern from Mountainside, New Jersey.
Hey, Mountainside, not far from where I grew up.
Very nice. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Berkeley Heights.
Wow, very close.
I know. Yeah, when are you planning on leaving?
My son has some distance to go.
Really?
Really.
Well, it's nice to have you with us, John. You are going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is John's topic?
Nerd out, brother.
Used to be, nerds had a hard time making friends who weren't imaginary, much less scoring a date to the prom. These days, of course, nerds are everywhere, a big part of the culture, and they're being catered to by all kinds of people. Each of our panelists is going to offer you proof the nerdy have now inherited the earth. Pick the real story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Ready.
All right. First, let's hear from Adam Felber.
When you find yourself up in the great white north, tied to the railroad tracks or in some other sort of dire need, and you call for help, you know who always arrives to get their man, right? Of course, I'm talking about the Royal Canadian Jedi Knights. Yes, Dudley Do-Right, meet Dudley Skywalker. As part of a community policing initiative, the Mounties' new law enforcement partners are government-funded local quasi-militias who, starting in 2012, have the right to name and outfit themselves. Which naturally has led to an enterprising group of nerds founding Edmonton's Jedi Knights, a 14-man force dedicated to combating Canada's dark side. Quote, the lightsabers are only ceremonial, like most military swords these days, says Jedi Master Sean Nasseri. But our job is real, and it turns out that the ways of the force are pretty compatible with Canadian law, and our environment can be not unlike the ice planet Hoth. Still, it's clear that the young Padawans are less equipped to deal with real terrestrial danger than their professional mounted cousins. So if you do find yourself in peril out there, well, may the horse be with you.
Oh!
Mm.
Oh!
The Jedi Knights of Edmonton, Canada, an officially recognized law enforcement body. Your next story of the rise of the planet of the nerds comes from Amy Dickinson.
Anyone who trolls through YouTube has stumbled upon Lego Star Wars and Lego Raiders of the Lost Ark and other classic movies made by pocket-protected nerds who spend untold hours assembling things from teeny tiny pieces of plastic. But suddenly, geek is cool. And so, coming next fall, it's Lego TV, where your favorite shows are recreated in Lego. Thrilled to the tension on Lego Jersey Shore, where Lego Snooki almost drowns in the Lego hot tub after a night of chugging little Lego cocktails. From PBS, you can watch Downton Lego Abbey. Over 100,000 pieces were used to create the set and cast, not counting horses. Watch the campaign for the presidency on Lego NBC Nightly News with Lego Brian Williams. Lego Andrea Mitchell travels the country on a Lego bus interviewing candidates who aren't merely acting like they're made of plastic. They really are made of plastic.
Lego TV, where everything is acted out by Legos. And the final chapter in this trilogy of dorkdom comes from Roy Blunt Jr.
When it comes to pleasures of the flesh, a nerd's thoughts naturally give up on this earth and turn to outer space. Somewhere on some far-off galaxy, the nerd's willing partner must reside. But that's just romance, fantasy. Now, with the nerdosphere becoming such a robust demographic, Nevada sex trade entrepreneur Dennis Hoff plans to open, next month, 90 miles from Las Vegas, a sci-fi brothel. Alien Cat House, as it's called, will provide close encounters with beam-you-up girls of all planets for guys willing to pay. Hoff's expertise is established. He's the star of a TV reality show set at his Moonlight Bunny Ranch. But on this new venture, he has brought in notorious Madam Heidi Fleiss to design otherworldly costumes and decors. All legal in Nevada, and also, if I'm not mistaken, on Alpha Cygnus 9. But, of course, there you also have the poisonous dart-shooting rodents.
All right, here are your choices. From Adam Felber, how the Mounties have commissioned a group of Jedi to patrol the streets of Edmonton with their ceremonial lightsabers. From Amy Dickinson, a TV channel devoted to Lego versions of sort of grown-up TV shows and not just those dorky ones. And from Roy Blunt Jr., a brothel with a sci-fi theme planned for Nevada. Which of these is the real story of the triumph of the dorks?
Well, Roy's is pretty exciting, but, you know, as a father of an 8-year-old who is obsessed with Legos, I'm thinking there might be a market for that, so I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B, Amy's story of all Lego TV, Lego, like Lego Downton Abbey?
Yeah, I'll stick with it.
All right, you're going to stick with it. Well, we spoke to somebody who reported on this new initiative.
People who grew up watching Captain Kirk get the Green Lady on Star Trek reruns now have a chance to fly into Las Vegas and have their dreams realized.
That was Henry Green. He's a reporter for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and he actually broke the story of the planned geek brothel. So sadly, I guess for all Lego fans everywhere, Amy's story was not true. And happily for everyone else, Roy's was. So I'm sorry you did not win our game, but you didn't earn a point for Amy for her wonderful
thank
idea.
Thank you.
The Lego
You're
channel.
Welcome,
sorry.
Amy.
Thanks for playing, John.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where people who've done great things get reminded what it's like to do something else. Paul Feig had a rough time growing up. He was awkward and shy and often humiliated. We know this because he's made a career out of making books, TV shows, and films about people like him. The cult classic TV show Freaks and Geeks, for example, and more recently the movie Bridesmaids. Paul Feig, we hope being on this show helps heal your wounds. Welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. So I'm not exaggerating about your youth, and I know this because you've, among other things, written books about it. You wrote two books, two memoirs, one called Kick Me, one called Super Stud, about the hard time you had growing up.
Yeah, you know, I like to throw myself on the sword so that others may feel better about themselves. I tell the stories that you all want to forget, but when you remember it, it hopefully makes you laugh. So
yes.
That is my
well,
public duty.
You and your friend Judd Apatow took that material and you made the great TV show Freaks and Geeks, which only lasted for like 14 or 15 episodes, but is beloved.
Yeah, we went 18 episodes, that was all.
Revived lately in Iowa.
Yes, exactly.
But you know,
they got the geeks part right.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many young stars you two discovered on that show. It's really...
There's James Franco, Seth Rogen. A lot of the guys who become your, at least Judd Apatow's acting company started on that show.
Yeah, Jason Segel. It's kind of crazy how many people came out of there. No, it was great. I mean, I feel like they're all my kids. I'm a proud father right now.
Exactly. Now, when you were going through this stuff, when you yourself were in junior high school and high school, and a geek and a freak, depending on the day, did you say to yourself, someday I'm going to become rich and famous making art about this?
Well, I thought the show was going to be really successful because I thought, who wouldn't want to relive the worst years of their life?
And
turns out nobody really wanted to.
Really, nobody at all.
No.
Did you guys, when you did that show, were you like, well, I mean, because we've seen so many shows and movies about kids in high school, but did you decide there was like a need that hadn't been filled, a story that hadn't been told?
Well, I thought so because I always would, you know, see these shows about high school, a movie about high schools, and they're always about the popular kids and the good-looking kids and their problems with dating and romance. And it was like, that had nothing to do with anything I went through in high school. We were literally just trying to survive the day. You know, and the head of the network was very upset with our show because he said, there's no victories. And I always kind of say, well, look, they're alive at the end of the day. That's
really? Kind
of,
right. I'm making this show. That's a victory.
Yeah.
Exactly. And look at me now.
Yeah.
Do you ever go back to your old neighborhood?
and see what happened to the other kid.
No, I'm always, I've never been to a class reunion or anything because I'm always afraid of that one. There's going to be some Carrie-like incident.
Oh, really?
Aww.
Yeah.
Like, there'll be the one guy that none of us paid attention to suddenly takes his revenge. So, no, I've steered clear.
You know, if you go back, all the kids who were mean to you in high school will start showing you the screenplays they wrote. I guarantee it. Hey, let's talk about...
They'll just beat me up.
Yeah, well, no.
Or both.
Screenplays are going to be worse than the punches, though.
Yeah, really.
So,
it'll take longer to endure, true. Exactly.
Here, I'm going to give you my screenplay and stuff you in the locker again so you have time to read it.
Yeah. I can either continue and read your Act 3, but I'll take the swirly, thank you.
Let's talk about Bridesmaids, the highest grossing R-rated female comedy ever. Is that correct?
Ah. Thank you. My gosh.
It is a hilarious movie. I will point out, though, that it is a movie that was written by two women, including its star, Kristen Wiig. It stars a whole bunch of women. It is almost entirely about the experience of women. And you, sir, are a man.
Yes.
Did they not notice that when they hired you to direct it?
I was the fox in the hen house, exactly.
Did you learn anything about women that you didn't know? I mean, in your books, you describe yourself as a young man as not being, shall we say, adept with the opposite sex.
I mean, honestly, it just reinforced everything that I thought to be true, which is just that guys are really about kind of putting each other down and being very aggressive in their humor to each other.
Yeah.
And women's humor seems to be a little more supportive. It's just kind of trying to make the other one laugh through funny voices and kind of talking about other people. I respond to that. I feel less like I'm going to get beat up in a room full of women than I do in a room full of guys.
Oh, seemingly often a concern with you, I can't help but notice.
There's always a beating around the corner. When you're like me.
There are a lot of great comic set pieces in the movie. The one that everybody talked about was one where the women in the movie have a suspect lunch and then go to try on these expensive bridesmaids dresses when all of a sudden the suspect lunch has its effects.
We're very proud.
Oh, yeah. And it is perhaps the grossest thing I have ever seen in a female oriented. I mean, it's straight out of, like, the most gross-out boys movie, but it's a girl. Was there any resistance to that scene from anyone at any point?
You know what it was? It was really, when you're doing a big comedy, the first thing you do is you try to make sure that you're telling a very emotional, real story. And that's literally, with all the other crazy stuff going on, that's what people really respond to, and the fact that Kristen does this amazing performance is very grounded, and it's about this female friendship. But then, on top of that, you want these, you know, what we call set pieces in Hollywood, but they're kind of those water cooler moments where you just want something that's outrageous, but you want it to come out of the story. And we needed to illustrate that she's making a mistake that's going to get her in trouble with her best friend, and she's pretending that she has more money than she doesn't, so she passes off a cheap restaurant. And it just seemed like the funniest way to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, it was.
It was.
So you're saying, well, we
and
just need
classy.
Nothing but class from the first vomit to the last explosive bout of diarrhea.
My top hat and my ascot.
Well, Paul Feig, we are delighted to have you with us, and we have invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine.
So it's 2012, and as we all know, that's when the Mayans predicted that the calendar would end, along with the rest of the world, and the only survivors would be John Cusack and his estranged wife. Now, the Mayans predicted that. They knew about John Cusack. It's impressive. Yeah. Now, if the past is any guide, the prediction of the end of the world probably will not happen, because all the other predictions of the end of the world have not happened so far. We're going to ask you about three predictions about the end of the world. If you get two of these questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. You ready to play?
Yes.
All right.
I can't wait.
Carl, who is Paul Feig playing for?
Paul is playing for Zachary Evans of New York City.
All right.
And Zachary, I'm already sorry that I've lost you this contest.
Aww.
Spoken like a true geek. All right. Here's your first question. A Texas cult leader, this is somewhat recently, named Hong Min Chen, he predicted that God would appear to announce the end of the world on March 31st, 1998. Where, according to Mr. Chen, would God appear? Would it be A, at midcourt in the NCAA finals, B, on cable TV, or C, in the person of Texas Governor George W. Bush, who would reveal his divinity?
Oof. Oh, boy. I got to say C is the most tempting, and I wish it would have happened. How interesting. Let's see. You know what? Let's go with A.
You're going to go with A in midcourt. That they'd be playing the game, maybe the finals, and all of a sudden there'd be a puff of smoke and God would appear.
Yeah, you'd hope. You'd hope.
Yeah, you'd hope. No, actually, it was B on cable TV. He said that God would appear on cable TV according to the prediction, and God is so powerful that you'd be able to see him even if you didn't have cable.
Wow.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, there you go. How sorry, Zach. Glorious is that.
Did not happen. All right, on to your next prediction.
Was God going to be selling the ShamWow? Is that something like
that? Very good.
Anybody who was using antennas at that moment would, you know, the message that they would take away from the announcement of the end of the world would be, we've got cable!
The world can't end
we've
now,
got cable.
I've got cable!
There is a heaven.
All right. You still have two more chances, so it's not the end of the world.
Excellent. Nicely done. Nicely played.
Thank you. Here's your next foiled apocalypse. In 2008, an actual lawsuit was filed against whom? For fear, if not stopped, they would destroy the Earth. Was it A, the makers of Red Bull energy drink, B, the scientists behind the Large Hadron Collider, or C, the producers of the TV show John and Kate Plus 8?
Oh. As much as I wish it was C, I'm pretty sure it's B.
It's the Large Hadron Collider.
Yes.
You're right. Yeah, that's what it was. The lawsuit was filed in federal court. Claiming that if the machine was turned on, it would create a black hole and destroy everything. That is, of course, exactly what happened. All right, last up, radio preacher Harold Camping. We remember that he predicted the world would end on two different dates in 2011. Yes. Neither rapture happened, as we know. He explained this strange lapse. How? A, it did happen. Mm-hmm. We just were all left behind.
Ooh.
Nobody was raptured. Turns out nobody was good enough to go. B, God was just messing with him. The world will end on sweetest day 2013. Or C, he's just not a very good prophet.
I believe I was obsessed with Harold Camping.
Yes.
I believe it was C.
You're right. He said, finally, that he wasn't a very good prophet. He said... Which was fairly honest of him. Mm-hmm. He said...
And appears in no books of the Bible.
Yeah.
that's Stephen.
He said, I obviously haven't understood it properly because we're still here.
Yeah.
But you know what's weird? The fact that he said that makes me want to believe him now about everything.
I know.
He nailed that.
Yeah.
He'll eventually get something right.
That's right. Carl, how did Paul Feig do on our show?
Paul, you had two correct answers, so you win for Zachary Evans.
Oh,
well done.
Carl, warm up those vocal cords. You got a message to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So you did so well. How does this make you feel about your life of success?
I'm walking on air right now.
I know.
Dangerous.
Yes.
You finally go back to that high school, Paul.
I'm going to my next reunion.
Yeah. Now you're ready to go. Paul Feig, among many others.
Right before being punched. I won on Wait, Wait. you think you can beat me up? I won a contest on NPR.
Paul Feig is the director of Bridesmaids, as well as many other wonderful things. Bridesmaids is out now in DVD. Paul Feig, thank you so much for joining us. Great to talk
to you. Peter, thank you. I had the greatest time.
Thanks,
everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In just a minute, Carl gets sassy in the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur language programs, offering portable audio instruction for more than 45 languages. Learn more at pimsleur.com. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, supporting research on how social factors like housing and jobs affect health. Learn more at rwjf.org. And the Poetry Foundation, celebrating 100 years of Poetry Magazine. Online at poetryfoundation.org. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, moving on up, it's the American dream, but American upward mobility is falling way behind Europe's and Canada's. What's up? Plus, we go to the Strait of Hormuz, now ground zero in the standoff with Iran and choke point for one-fifth of the world's oil supply. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11.
Will two more debates make a difference to New Hampshire Republicans? Can Mitt Romney finally get more than 25% of the vote? I'm Warren Olney. On To the Point, is Newt Gingrich going negative? Can Rick Santorum do well enough to go on to South Carolina? Does John Huntsman stand a chance? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 8 o'clock.
You're listening to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. Coming up in about 20 minutes at 12 noon is the Splendid Table. Right now, the time is 11:39. It's 47 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Adam Felber, Roy Blunt Jr., and Amy Dickinson. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl celebrates the champions of this year's Rhyme Bowl in the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roy, this week we said a fond farewell to Michelle Bachmann. She left the presidential race after her poor showing in Iowa. And one of the reasons she might have done poorly is that on the day before the caucus on Monday, instead of campaigning for her, her husband, Marcus Bachmann, spent his time doing what?
Many things come to mind.
I know. It's really
I'll give you a hint. Apparently, their dog, Boomer, his future is very bright. It's so bright.
He's going to have puppies. She's going to have puppies.
No.
It's so bright that whatever is next in God's plan for Boomer. He's so bright that...
like physically bright.
Physically bright. Oh, he decorated the dog like a Christmas tree.
Well, he did actually decorate the dog a little bit. He got the dog what?
Oh, gave him some sunglasses.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Wow. Instead of helping his wife campaign, he was out shopping for doggy sunglasses. This is true. In her concession speech where she announced she was dropping out of the race, Michelle Bachmann said, quote, "Yesterday, when we were out on Main Street in Des Moines, he was out buying doggy sunglasses for our dog Boomer while we were all out visiting the many businesses," unquote.
Huh.
She did not then go on to say, quote, "And it was then that I realized you were all right about him all along." This is on video, and I urge you to see it, because when she drops this revelation, Marcus Bachmann, standing next to her, makes a face like the Pillsbury Doughboy would if he got busted for cross-dressing. It's like, yes, I've been a naughty boy.
Terrible. I just can't believe that Marcus, after all these years, can't find a more plausible way to explain away the missing time. Sorry, honey, I was shopping for doggy sunglasses.
Like, Marcus, where were you? For the dog.
Maybe. I have a possible explanation. Because this also explains the entire presidential campaign of Michelle Bachmann. Maybe they're on some weird months-long scavenger hunt. It's like, here's an item in the scavenger hunt list. Become GOP front runner briefly. Next item, doggy sunglasses. Okay, got him. How did the planning meeting go? It's like, okay, it's the day before the caucuses. I'm gonna go and shore up our support with our caucus leaders. Oh, that's great. I'm gonna go and do media, and I'll get the doggy sunglasses.
I think what happened.
Marcus always gets the doggy sunglasses.
No, I think that probably happened every day on the campaign. And so one of the staffers had a list, and Marcus would be like, "And I'll do a press availability session." And they're like, "No, we need doggy sunglasses,
yes.
Marcus." All right.
Never know. Roy, a team of Japanese researchers have invented a revolutionary new security system for cars, possibly eliminating the need for keys and/or your dignity. What is it?
My dignity?
Yeah, if you use the car.
If you had any.
Here's, let me explain more clearly. Yeah. As you know, for a long time, you started your car by turning a key.
Yeah.
And now they've got these keyless ignitions where the car knows it's you because you've got something in your pocket. This is an advance. You can tell it's you by your what?
By you say, in Japanese. You have to say it just like this, too. In Japanese, I don't speak Japanese. You have to say, "Hey, little car, it's me." Something like that.
Who's your best buddy?
Who's your best buddy?
Woody.
Who's going to start up?
Daddy's here. Give me some sugar. No, I don't know.
You know?
Well, I'll try to work on it some more if you like.
It recognizes the driver once you're in the driver's seat.
It smells you?
No.
No. It recognizes the
it can scan your bottom? It does. It scans your bottom.
It's got a butt scanner.
Yes.
All right.
Finally, the butt scanner.
The butt scanners are here. You get in your car, and your seat electronically scans your butt for identifying features.
How are we doing?
It's like two cheeks, check. Appropriate spacing between them, check. Slightly bigger than the last time you sat down, yeah. Mm-hmm. Inventors claim the butt scan is 98% accurate. It's less intrusive and more convenient than the fingerprint or iris scans, since all you have to do is sit down.
Mm. However, 98% accurate isn't enough.
Really?
When you're going or not going depends on your own butt.
Because I hate to rely on my butt for anything. Really.
What do you do when it doesn't start? You call AAA and they send like a butt double down?
He's actually been very successful in Japan. They haven't done well in America.
Well, they don't have butts.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. They tried it in America in test markets, and all the butt scanners suffocated. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank. But first, it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show in Salt Lake City at Abravanel Hall on February 16th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Gina from Huron, Tennessee.
Huron, Tennessee? No, I don't know that place. Where is that?
It is in the middle of nowhere between Memphis and Nashville off I-40.
What do you do there?
I-40, the music highway.
Exactly. I am a stay-at-home mom with two wonderful boys.
Wonderful boys. Isn't that hard, being in a home with two boys?
It is sometimes, but I've learned to adjust to, you know, Star Wars and karate.
You know, it helps really if you get drunk at around, right?
It does.
When they get home from school.
Just a little red wine.
Said the professional advice columnist.
Right. Right.
Anyway, welcome to the show, Gina.
Thank you.
Carl Castle is now going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks, you will be a big winner.
Okay.
Ready to go?
I am.
All right, here is your first limerick.
I'm a crab that's above all the rest. I look great in a small sweater vest. Although you may scoff, I am named for the Hoff, because like him, I have hair on my...
chest.
Yes! Scientists, that's right. Scientists found a new species of crab recently. Its distinguishing feature, it's a hairy chest, so naturally... they nicknamed it the Hasselhoff crab after David Hasselhoff. These crabs also, just by coincidence, run in sexy slow motion and have talking cars. It should be noted that the crabs found in volcanic vents in the ocean floor use the hairs to cultivate bacteria, which they then eat up, just like David Hasselhoff does with his.
How are their backs?
Probably hairy.
Hairy, yeah, we don't like that. That's why they have to live in volcanoes.
That's what makes those crabs unsexy.
Otherwise. All right, here's your next limerick.
Okay.
To see what my future might hold, this suit keeps my body controlled. Now my limbs won't extend, and my spine's got a bend. It shows what it's like to be...
The bent spine, stiff limbs.
Old.
Yes, old. This is a case... of a bluff story on Wait, Wait, some years ago, actually coming true. A new suit developed at MIT will give young people an idea of what it's like to be an old person. The sleeves make your arms stiff. A helmet makes your spine curve uncomfortably. Glasses make small print hard to read. Also, the pants make you incapable of figuring out your new computer. All right, very good. Here is your last limerick.
Okay.
I'm a teen, but my mouth is not slack. Career-wise, I'm on a hot track. Whenever I sass, I move up in my class. I'm ahead when I learn to talk
back.
Right, back. A new study published in the journal Child Development claims that those teenagers who talk back are actually showing signs of independent thinking, the first step towards becoming a creative and successful adult. The idea is that instead of just saying, just shut up and do what I say, you should engage them in conversation, let them present their point, take them seriously.
This study was so obviously written by a bunch of kids.
Yeah. I know. Exactly.
Funny, it was published
right next to right alongside that study about having candy for dinner.
Yeah. And how watching TV while you do homework actually helps you academically.
A lot of really sound studies coming out these days.
It was published on My Little Pony Stationery. Now that I mentioned it.
In Highlights magazine.
Yeah.
And the little conclusion just reads, yaha. Estimation.
Carl, how did Gina do in our quiz?
Gina, you aced it. You had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Yay! Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for playing, Gina.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Peter, we have a 3-way tie.
Oh, my
Adam
gosh.
Felder,
oh.
Amy Dickinson, Roy Blunt Jr., they all have 3 points.
All right. We have randomly selected you, Amy, to go first, so here we go. The clock will start when you begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, President Obama and defense officials announced their plans for a new scaled-back blank.
Military.
Right. The U.S. said it will not be deterred by blank's warnings to keep American ships out of the Persian Gulf.
Iran.
Right. An Army demolitions expert arrested at a Texas airport this week told TSA officials he just forgot he had blanks in his carry-on.
Plastic explosives.
Yes. PayPal president Scott Thompson was promoted this week to be the new CEO of blank.
Yahoo.
Right. According to a poll out this week, 2% of Americans think Mitt Romney's real first name is blank.
Mittens.
Yes, mittens.
Oh, my God.
Well done.
Wow.
I am the 2%.
It's actually Willard is his first name. Yeah. In a statement released Monday, Queen of Soul, blank, announced she was engaged.
Oh, Aretha Franklin.
Yes, millions of viewers tuned in to watch blank host his 40th New Year's Eve special.
Dick Clark.
Yes, a Florida man who did not want his girlfriend to move in with him solved the problem by blanking.
Moving.
No, by burning down his house. Tampa resident Kent Peruse's house has been reduced to a pile of ash, but it's still better than having to make room in his closet for all those shoes. Or so he would think. Ironically, Peruse's prison cell comes complete with a walk-in, and his girlfriend is set to move in next Tuesday.
Ah!
Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had 7 correct answers, Peter, for 14 more points. She now has 17 points and a good lead.
Mm.
Well done. All right. Adam, you are up next. Fill in the blank. Detectives are investigating after a dead body was found in the grounds of the Blank's estate in Sandringham, England.
Queen.
Yes. The prosecutor in the trial of ousted Egyptian leader Blank said this week he's seeking the death penalty.
Hosni Mubarak.
Yeah. For the first time since 2004, all 3 U.S. Blank makers are on a track to be profitable again. Car makers, yes. Afghan President Hamid Karzai welcomed plans that would allow the Blank to open an office in Qatar.
Taliban.
Yes. Due to a programming error on the Boston Herald's website, a story on a Dunkin' Donuts business deal was flagged as blank.
Offensive.
No,
a
terror alert.
Oh,
Apple is suing a doll maker over their plans to sell a blank action figure.
Steve Jobs.
Right. 100 years after it sank, 5,000 artifacts from the blank are going to be auctioned off in New York.
Titanic.
Right. A man trying to rob a bank in London blew it when he blanked.
Deposited.
No, when he handed...
Spontaneously.
Everything was going great, but then he, in just the heat of the moment, you know you get excited, he handed the teller his gun instead of the money back.
Oh.
And he played it out in his head like 1,000 times, like, hold the gun, hand over the bag, hold the gun, hand over the bag. But you know what it is, pressure of the moment, he held the bag, handed over the gun. He tried to get his gun back, it didn't work. He ran out, stole a bicycle, and pedaled away.
Oh.
Last time he handed over a bag of guns.
Can't get it right. Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
Adam had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, but Amy still has the lead with 17.
All right, how many then? How many then does Roy need to win?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
All right. Here we go, Roy. This is for the game. Police in Los Angeles arrested a man they suspect of setting a series of blanks on fire over New Year's.
Car.
Yes, a state-run website in Cuba is blaming Twitter for false reports Monday about blank's death.
Castro.
Right. Republicans challenged President Obama's appointment of Richard Cordray to head the blank.
The Consumer Financial Protection Board.
Yeah, Bureau. It's good. Bureau. State officials in Ohio are stopping the gas extraction process known as fracking after seismologists linked it to a recent series of small blanks.
Earthquakes.
Right. Customers of a Wells Fargo bank in Sacramento are complaining after bankers accidentally blanked.
Just for the life of them, couldn't remember where they put that money.
They left the bank unlocked for 48 hours. Officials in Charlton, Massachusetts admit they overreacted a little when they sent police to blank.
To arrest a little girl who had said no.
No. They admit they overreacted when they sent police to collect an overdue library book or two from a five-year-old kid. Sometimes a friendly reminder through the mail just won't do, especially if the offender can't yet read. According to Charlton Police Sergeant Dan Down, the tiny criminal was in possession of 2 picture books, both several months overdue, which the officer was sent to confiscate or demand payment for. And the library is currently sued for 5 million chocolate gold coins. Carl, did Roy do well enough to win?
Roy needed at least 7 correct answers to tie, but Roy had just 4 correct answers. So with 17 points, Amy Dickinson is this week's champion.
Well done, Amy Dickinson. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what will Rupert Murdoch accidentally reveal now that he's on Twitter. But first, let me tell you all that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. The Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrusts.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord, and the True Earl of Grantham. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our intern is Hannah Withers. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Lester Larchick and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac here at Chase Bank. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Waltrover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is, let me check, yes it is, Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will Rupert Murdoch inadvertently tweet now that he's online? Adam Felber.
At the real Satan. Be there for the game around 7. I'll bring potato salad, bro.
Amy Dickinson.
Rupert Murdoch will be just about to tweet something revealing when the New York Post will beat him to the punch by hacking into his head and putting it on the front page.
And Roy Blunt Jr.
He'll start doing tweets in which he says things like, the New York Post today had a very impressive editorial, R-O-F-L. And even worse, things like, far too many died in highway accidents this holiday weekend, R-O-F-L. And people are thinking, why would Rupert Murdoch be rolling on the floor laughing over that? But it turns out that he thinks R-O-F-L stands for Rupert, Our Fearless Leader.
Well, if Rupert Murdoch reveals any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also, Amy Dickinson, Adam Felber, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. You're fabulous. I'm Peter Segal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR.
And celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
On the next On Being, Roseanne Cash, daughter of country music icon Johnny Cash, singer and writer, Twitter poet. She shares her thoughts on the source of creativity, the workings of love and grief, and fractals as a way of thinking about the divine. In music and in life, Roseanne Cash is a time traveler. I'm Krista Tippett. Please join me. That's from 8 p.m.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock. Nashville weather for this afternoon, cloudy skies continuing with a high in the lower 50s, and for tonight a 40% chance of showers in cloudy skies, the low in the lower 40s. Right now, 48 degrees in Nashville at 12 noon.
It's the Splendid Table from APM American Public Media.